Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for the right payments API, check out the Braintree V.0 SDK. One simple integration, you get every way to pay. To learn more and to try out the sandbox, go to BraintreePayments.com/Android. And by Lynda.com, the online learning platform with over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology, and creative skills. For a free 10-day trial, visit Lynda.com/allaboutandroid. That's LYNDA.com/allaboutandroid. And by Gazelle. Would you like to get cash for your old HTC or other Android device? Well, Gazelle makes it easy. The shipping is free and the payment is fast. What's your smartphone worth? Find out at Gazelle.com. Hello, welcome to another episode of All About Android, episode 229, recorded on Tuesday, September 1st, 2015. We're your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
I'm Ron Richards.
And
I'm Gina Trapani.
I couldn't remember if the last time if we've started introducing you or if you're just kind of in line. I think you should always be in line, Gina.
Yeah, come on. I'm a vet.
Yeah, exactly.
She's a co-host emeritus or whatever that word is. Like, she will forever be a co-host.
That's right. Yeah. Not only will you be a guest, you also have your initials next to stories when you come on the show every time. You're like, dang it, that's the other part of it. I have to read things. How have you been, Gina?
Initials next to stories. I get in line introduction. I'm doing great. I'm great. So happy to be on the show tonight. Lots to talk about. I'm excited I got to be on this one.
So before we kind of kick things off, Ron, you just flew back from New York, right? You were out in New York?
Yep, I just got back in San Francisco this afternoon, and so I'm Skyping in from home. But yeah, I was in New York for the last about week and a half, and I got to go to DroidCon in New York City last week, which is pretty awesome.
That's cool. How was that?
It was really cool. I got to see our good friend Florence Ion in person, as well as I finally met Liam Spradlin, in person. It was really cool, and it was really kind of awesome to see like a bustling center of developers all jamming and talking Android, and the rooms were packed, and of course it was super hot in New York City, so everybody was dying, but it was air conditioned, and it was great to see Google and Facebook and Uber and all these like big companies were there recruiting, and it was a really good vibe. It was a fun event. So I mean, if you're a developer, they do these Droid Cons all around the world. This one was in New York. They've got one. They told me they've got one coming up in San Francisco, Jason, that we should attend. We should talk to them about doing something. But yeah, if you go to droidcon.com, you can see all the cities they do it in, but they're doing them worldwide. And it's really nice to see some independent momentum building in the developer community. So this isn't done by Google. It's totally independent groups that do it. And they're groups of developers that put on the show. So it was a lot of fun. That was the highlight of my trip.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think I saw a picture on maybe your Google Plus or whatever. You saw Michael Wolfson there as well.
Ran into Michael. That was great. Yeah, we had a little reunion. We were wearing a similarly patterned shirt, so that was fun.
Which you planned, of course.
Of course. But it was a blast. Yeah, it was just neat. And so I got to see Florence moderated a panel of Android journalists, and so that was kind of an interesting conversation that with a whole bunch of people. Really good, kind of good discussion about hardware and software and that sort of thing. So it was good.
Nice.
So.
And then Gina, Think Up, but also MakerBase. I'm not sure that you've been on since the official launch of MakerBase. I honestly can't remember.
I think I was on Twig, but MakerBase .se. It's live. It's open to the public. It is free to use. You should go check it out. Sign in, add your projects, add your favorite Android developers, your favorite apps. It's like Wikipedia. It's kind of user editable. It's like IMDb for apps, but anybody can add other makers and projects. And it's just kind of a fun, easy way to find, the people behind the tech tools that you love.
I mean, and you're forgetting the most important thing. It's awesome.
Yeah, there is that part too.
Of course, she made it. She's probably going to let other people say that for her.
Yeah, she needs to say that deep down inside.
How is it like when? I mean, because I imagine your team, you know, you're not like Google. You don't have a million gazillion people working on this stuff. It was ThinkUp initially, and now it's ThinkUp and MakerBase. Does that mean that you're just working day and night and weekends and everything now just to make to run two services instead of just one?
Well, yeah, there's definitely like a how do we split our time question going on. It's two different products, but they share a lot of the same code. They share a lot of the same voice. They share things like color palettes and a lot of the same kind of design language. So we're just kind of seeing, you know, MakerBase was kind of a 20% project and we wanted to see how it would do and how customers respond to it. And we're sort of spending our time based on, you know, what people are super interested in. Like at the end of the year, everybody wants to know their Twitter stats for the year. So at the end of the year, we'll certainly be doing more ThinkUp Insights, but kind of during the summer and now the fall when things are going to heat up after Labor Day and people are going to start doing, you know, kind of the last releases of the year, I'm excited to kind of feature awesome makers and apps and tech tools and stuff. So go on the site, and if there's something awesome that you love that you think should be featured on our front page, just click on, there's a flag button, click on the flag button. That sounds negative, but it's actually a way for us, one of the ways that you can say, hey, you know, feature this project and get these folks some credit, because it's really just about kind of giving and getting credit. But to answer your question, yes,
it's a little bit
more work to do both,
sure.
But it's been a lot of fun. I have a short attention span, so it makes me, I can work really furiously on one product for a few days, and then I get to take a break and switch gears, and that's, I really like that. That works for me.
You're a true entrepreneur. That's why you like that. You know what I mean?
Yes.
If you weren't spending your time working on these projects, then you probably wouldn't be nearly as happy as you are. So.
Yeah, and we were lucky enough, Gina, you invited us to the beta a few months ago, and it's been great to see the evolution. And like, I love the logo. I love how the design has changed from when you initially invited us to where it is now. It's come together really nicely. So it's awesome. So everybody should check it out. It's makerba.se. So check it out.
MakerBase.
Thank you.
Awesome. Definitely do that. But hey, we're here to talk about Android. We've got a lot to talk about. We're going to be discussing the facelift that Google just saw, the age of low-cost, high-performance hardware by total newcomers. It's kind of a crazy trend that we're seeing right now, and the hardware section is filled with that. Amazon's changing mobile strategy, YouTube gaming, and a whole lot more. But let's get right to it. Let's talk about some news.
And according to my Apple Watch, it's time for Android news.
Mac and Josh just had to go there.
Josh,
a reminder that that Brian is not here again.
Yes,
and in his place we have Josh Windich at the controls, also known as the Mac and Josh on Twitter.
Right. Yes, so I feel right at home. I feel really good.
I can tell where you feel most comfortable. Is with things like the Apple Watch as detailed by your news drop. So thanks a lot for that.
Yeah, I got it. You know,
Jason, be careful. Let's not go too deep in the A word.
Let's not because I continue to hear from a lot of people about the A word on this show. So we'll try and, I guess.
Although to be fair, there was a lot of Android talk on MacBreak Weekly this morning.
That is true.
There was.
Hey, that is a really good point. Hey, how about we talk about a different A word altogether? Wall Street Journal reported that Amazon still hopes to release another smartphone after what we could probably all agree was a pretty spectacular flop. That was the Fire Phone last year. That could take a year or two to happen. You know, they're playing their time, spreading their time out, working on it. Dozens of engineers inside Amazon's lab, 126, the lab that helped create the Fire Phone, have been laid off. So that's not good. The remaining team. What's that?
I think this is the first sign. It's like, we're dedicated to doing a new phone.
However,
we're going to get rid of everyone that worked on that last one. So you're like,
we're dedicated to doing a totally new phone, which means you guys that did the old one that really sucked and flopped, you're out of here. We're getting some new people.
Wasn't Amazon in the news recently? Something about the New York Times and something about work-life balance. And
were these people all crying at their desks during the layoffs? I want to know.
That's a really good point.
Or were they celebrating to finally be let loose from the hell that is Amazon?
Yeah, I don't know.
Did they handpick? I was going to be really mean. Did they handpick all the pregnant women and people who have like ill, you know, family members to take care of and lay them off? Because that would have really killed two birds with. Okay, sorry.
Wow, Gina. Gina's bringing it.
Sorry. Well,
At least Gina went there. I mean, many of us were going to go there. At least Gina was the one to do it. Who knows? Who knows how the inner workings of it? Even after that article, it was very unclear, like, how it actually is, whether that article was based on old or new Amazon.
Did you see that? And I know it's so obvious to say this, but The Onion once again killed it, because after that New York Times article came out, The Onion had an article that was Jeff Bezos says that Amazon HR will work 60-hour weeks to fix the problems.
They won't stop in their tireless pursuit. Yes, no, that was fantastic. Love The Onion. So the remaining team, whoever that may be, probably working their butts off as a result of everyone else leaving, is reportedly still working on projects like a kitchen computer controlled by voice commands, kind of what Alexa is already, right? A super battery for Kindle, talking a 2-year lifespan, and glasses, glasses-free 3D Fire tablet. So some of those lessons weren't really learned, although this time they're saying that it's differing. The report, anyways, is saying that it's a different technology than the 3D, the faux 3D that was used in the Fire Phone. Let's hope it's not like a gimmick that the tablet is hinging on and maybe just a feature that most people probably won't use.
I mean, is it Bezos and him at the top saying we need to be doing these cutting edge stuff? Or is there someone in upper middle management who's obsessed with things like 3D? And, you know, because they come out of nowhere with these weird, you know, things that they want to do. And I like innovation, but like, do one thing well first, set a base. Yeah. Right.
The obsession with 3D is very interesting. Because everyone else in the industry seems to have moved on from 3D. And Amazon's still like, I think we can make 3D work. I think we can do this.
We will make it work. If we all work 300 hours a week, we can make it work.
Yes.
It does feel like they really, really, really want to do something unique and differentiated. But they haven't quite hit it yet. Although, you know, my co-founder has Alexa, an Echo.
They have hit it on a couple of cases.
He loves it.
Yeah.
So it's been a success. Mm-hmm. I don't have one and I haven't used one, but it's been a success relatively.
I know. I kind of want
one. And I'll tell you, you know, get some brands or make a programmable dash button or link it with brands that I actually use, and I will order the hell out of those things. I love that. I love that technology. I have no interest in buying any of the products that they're using it with. But if you give me an Amazon button that I can program to any sort of product and throw it in the, you know, like I drink so much, you know, iced tea with, you know, Crystal Light iced tea mix. I hit that button, have it talk to the router and order it immediately. That's cool innovation, but they're being slow with that.
So. Yeah, I wonder why they don't have a programmable version of the dash. Yeah. That's a really good point. You'd think it would be pretty easy to program that on the fly.
Yeah. There's been some SDKs released. A friend of mine was messing around with a Python package that you could program it, but it's like, you know, it has to be, you know, super easy.
It's got to be dumb user simple. So, you know, like you go to Amazon, you link the button, you type in the URL of the product you want to program to, and you're done, and that's it. Like that doesn't, you know, like tinkering in Python is not for the average user, but. But a super battery for the Kindle is a good idea. That's the super batteries that's good things to look into. I mean, just make, if you want to make a phone, I understand laying off the people who worked on the last phone that was a flop. Totally understand. Hire new people. We're going to talk about it in hardware. There's so much going on in this space. Do a really kick-ass low-cost phone and have millions of people using an Amazon phone and then do weird stuff. Mm-hmm. Like I just think that's, it's so simple. Like, just do a really great phone that's unlocked carrier, you know, like no, use whatever carrier you want. Amazon can subsidize it and charge $199 and give it like a $399 specs level, and I bet you they would have tons of people using it.
Sure.
Maybe they feel like they've done that with the Kindle. It's not a phone, obviously, but they have had this crazy, you know, mobile device breakout success, which is just the Kindle, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I hear what you're saying. Just a base phone, Ron. I'm imagining you with a dash button that like bring just like cases of Snapple getting delivered to your door. I'm a little afraid for you, actually.
I would welcome it. It'd be fine, you know, like anything Yodel, Snapple, anything that I can get, I would gladly do it.
Carvel to California would be amazing.
I'm telling you, I am the perfect Amazon customer. I use Prime. I pretty much the majority of stuff I order through it. You know, like if it wasn't for Blue Apron sending me my meals on a weekly basis, I would order groceries and stuff like that. Like, it's so close, but it's just not, you know, not fully happening yet. So
I would say that I need a Lagunitas IPA button, but I live in Petaluma where Lagunitas is located, and it's pretty much falling out of the walls everywhere I turn. So,
well, you gotta be careful with the Lagunitas, Jason. If I remember correctly, with your beer wig,
I don't know what you're talking about. That's right. No, that was a scary life altering experience, yeah. Scarring to say the least. What else we got? Android right. Auto.
So Android Auto, this is a topic, Jason, that you've been very interested in ever since it was announced. And one of the challenges with folks developing on Android Auto, it is very difficult to test on because up till now you needed a car with a head unit. And like it's a very expensive endeavor to actually test what you're doing with it. And there have been some simulators that have been out there, but they haven't been as good as the real thing of actually having a head unit running Android Auto that you can test your software on. Well, Google has heard this, and they've now released the Android Auto desktop head unit that perfectly emulates the head unit experience on a desktop computer. Support for mouse input as well as voice input using the microphone, and there are ways to manually toggle from day to night times for testing parts of the apps that depend on those contextual behaviors. The previous simulators are officially depreciated. So if you are a developer and you're looking to really go deep with Android Auto, Google now has got a tool that will help you test it and check it out and simulate the Android Auto experience without having an actual car with a head unit. So this is good, I think. This is good progress.
I didn't realize that one of the limitations of Android Auto that developers have to work with, and I think it's different regionally. In Japan, there is a rule which basically says in any given app inside something like this, so Android Auto would have to comply with this, you can only use up to 4 taps to get something done. In the U.S., you can tap the screen no more than 6 times to get something done, which actually, when you think about it, 6 times...
6 is a lot.
6 is a lot when you're driving. You know, it's like, you know. So it's a good rule. There's an article on Android Central where he's kind of arguing, like, you hit that point, and there are ways to get around it and where people would just end up unplugging or, you know, doing whatever to do the thing that they want to do, and maybe that isn't the best approach, though they understand why it's there, and I totally understand why it's there, but that's interesting. An emulator like this could go a long way in showing a developer, oh wow, you know, we didn't take that into consideration. Check out what we get. Instead of getting what we intended, we get an error message that says, for safety reasons, no more items can be displayed. So, you know, emulators like this are very important in that regard.
I mean, and it's interesting when you think about it from a design standpoint, because this is such a different use case. I mean, this is somebody using your app while also driving 65 miles an hour on the freeway, you know, like that. And having an emulator on the desktop is great, but eventually at some point you got to go out on the road and see how it interacts with. And I think, you know, the idea of really testing this and like putting cameras on the user as they're using it and seeing how they're interacting and seeing how often their eyes are shifting to look at the head unit or whatever. I think it's a whole area that I think that we've done so little with that I'm excited to see it develop.
Yeah,
it's very cool.
Agreed, and I want to get one. I want to get a head unit.
You want one so badly, don't you?
Yeah, I would love to have one. Yes, not to mention the head unit in my car sucks, so I just want one, something, and I'd rather it be an Android Auto head unit. It's just it's integrated into the AC and all that, so there's no real way to replace it in my car. Whatever, I'll get a new car eventually. Gina, since you're here, why don't you tell us a little bit about Visor?
Yeah, Visor looks really cool. So, friend of All About Android, Kush Duda, am I saying that? It's Kush, right? Kosh. Introduced a beta.
It's Kosh's birthday today, I believe.
Oh, that's right. It is Kosh.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, so happy birthday, Kosh.
Happy birthday, Kosh.
For Kosh's birthday, he gave us another app. This guy just like makes apps. I mean, he's amazing. Well, he introduced a beta of a new Chrome app that he's been working on called Visor. And Visor gives users the ability to have their phone screen in an interface appear within the Chrome browser. No root required. Full control of the connected device via the mouse and keyboard, as well as a few keyboard shortcuts to operate your Android device in Chrome. And not only can you operate your Android device inside Chrome, you can share it with other people. Visor Share allows you to share a remote session with another user of Visor that you've assigned and granted access. So Kosh was like, look, I'm sick of, you know, having things happen with my code on devices that I didn't have here on site. So I made this so that I could see my code running on other people's devices in Chrome. So this is not fully baked yet. I think this was a you know, pretty early beta that got leaked. It's got some weirdness, and you know, I don't think the frame rate is the best. You're not going to be playing like high speed chase games or anything on it. But this is cool. This is really cool.
I mean, he's playing Angry Birds.
Yeah, that's not bad. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, no,
this
it's
is
very
this is just another example of like, wow, they can do this.
Yeah,
you know, it's you know, crazy.
Yeah,
no, really root. Impressed inside Chrome. This is really cool. I think an earlier version of myself would have been like, yeah, this is cool, but why would you want to do this? But I've been doing some more Android development lately and having my phone connected to my computer just for like debugging purpose or whatever. And this is amazing. I'm like, mm-hmm. This is incredible. This would be so helpful to me as a developer. I don't know how many, you know, real world uses there are for sort of regular civilians, but for anybody who's sort of interested in playing around with Android, what a neat thing and yeah. amazing that it's possible with Chrome and Android.
And not to mention, Kosh is a pretty respected developer in the Android world, so a lot of the work that he does is kind of aimed. It's almost like if you create an app for yourself, if you create an app that solves a problem for yourself, chances are it solves a problem for a lot of other people in your situation. I think that's, yeah. you know, that what drives Kosh to create something like this that didn't exist before. It's very cool to see. I don't know. It's cool to see something that you couldn't do very easily before. And especially now we're getting more of this stuff without root. For the longest time, we yes. just kind of got used to the fact that, oh, well, you can't do that without root privileges. Most people aren't going to go through the hassle and, you know, open up their phones to a possible security risk. And now these things are, you know, by and large, more and more possible without having to go through that security, that, you know, down that security rabbit hole. So,
yeah, definitely.
So that's great. We have an email from Fernando in San Diego, California. He said, I'm very bummed out. Lately, my Note 4 has been super sluggish due to the Google Now launcher crashing and reloading. When I went to the Google Play Store to seek support, I noticed that the Google Now launcher hasn't been updated in over a year. As a Google loyalist, I was devastated as I uninstalled the app and installed the Go Launcher app, which I am now in love with. Is the Google Now Launcher app just another abandoned project by Google? And guess what saw an update today?
a little bit of an update.
It's, you know, it's an update.
The lead.
Right. I mean, it's not the biggest update in the world, but if you go ahead and take a look at my screen, you will see that search bar up at the top. Has a little bit of a different look than you might be used to, partially because Google changed their logo today. That's their brand new logo, and so they've integrated it into the Google search bar. You also get it in the Google Now page. Actually, I can scroll over there real quick, and I think most people are kind of seeing this right now because all that stuff is just different. But you see it in the microphone as well. It's a kind of a weird multicolored microphone. I feel like I'm still kind of getting used to it myself. I like the Google logo. It kind of looks weird to me in the interface, but I think that's one of those things that after a couple of days, I'll be pretty used to it. But yeah, what do you guys think of the new logo? It was high time for Google to update their logo, right? Or do they ever really need to do that? It's been a long time.
It's been a really, really long time. It's a big change. I mean, really, all the other changes, and there's a great history of the logo up on the Google search page right now where you can kind of flip through all the different versions. They were all that sort of serif font and with varying levels of shading and stuff and drop shadow. But this is a whole new, all new typography, just a completely yep. different feeling. And I love it. I really, really love it. It feels very material. It feels very Android. Led, it feels like it came from Android, but with a heavy Chrome influence, I think. But I absolutely love it.
It also kind of feels alphabet-y. I don't know what the word is. Alphabet-y?
Alphabet-y. It's definitely alphabet-y. I mean, as someone who's who's firmly in the sans serif font family world, I'm glad to see them drop the serif font and go with a cleaner sans serif. And yeah, I mean, it's a great little refresh. I mean, more a great redesign that defines this major shift happened in the organization. And now they've got something visual to represent that. And I think that's great. And I'm having a blast now watching them slowly or quickly, depending on which way you look at it, update across the massive enterprise that is Google. Yeah. You know, like down to the Google logo on their Google Plus page, and uh-huh. I just got the Google Maps app update, and it has the new G in it, and it's like anxiously waiting to get the Google search app updated. Although I'm wondering, going back to your phone, Jason, I'm wondering because I liked how the search bar was, you know, it was, you know, gray text on white. It wasn't really, it didn't jump out at you, and I'm wondering if they'll keep the colored Google logo in the search bar there forever, or if they'll fade it back again.
Oh,
it
yeah.
really announces yeah. itself there. It
oh,
really
it totally
announces
does.
Itself.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah,
it totally does. But but they've been going brighter with everything, with material design and all that kind of stuff. I kind of, I don't know. I guess they could do, they could go either way, but I kind of get the feeling like it's there. I think if they were going to go with a muted version of it, they probably would have launched it with it.
Would've
but
done it,
who knows? You know, yeah. Google makes weird decisions like that all the time.
There was a photo, I think I saw it on Google Plus, of them at the Mountain View campus taking down the big, the Google letters and putting up the new ones. And someone said, "Oh, they're applying a new CSS style sheet to the campus."
Yes, I love that. That's so great. Like, it's perfect.
Okay, all right.
That was awesome.
That was pretty great, though.
We're all a bunch of nerds. So cool stuff. And next time you drive by the Google campus, it's going to look very different. It's going to look very modern, let's say. Let's take some time to thank the first sponsor of this episode of All About Android. That's Braintree. We're talking directly to developers here. This is code for easy online payments. If you're building a mobile app, if you're a developer, you're searching for a simple payment solution, you'll want to check out Braintree. It's the Braintree V.0 SDK. And it makes it very easy to offer multiple mobile payment types through your app. You can start accepting PayPal, Apple Pay, Bitcoin, Venmo, cards, soon Android Pay when Android Pay is finally released, and more. All the single integration. It's simple, secure payments, and it's code that you can literally, you can integrate it in minutes. And developers, you're covered here. You don't have to worry about taking days to integrate your payments. With Braintree, it's literally done in minutes. If you don't have the time, you can actually give them a call and they'll handle all of that integration for you. I say all of it, it's not very much, or they'll walk you through it to get you going with Braintree. And Braintree code supports Android, supports iOS, as well as JavaScript clients, and has SDKs in 7 different languages: .NET, Node.js, Java, Perl, PHP, Python, and Ruby. And it's clearly documented. Elegant code, super easy to work with. Like I said, 10 lines of in-app code. And Braintree gives you just about the easiest way possible to accept multiple payment types with that one simple integration, and just incredible developer support if you have any questions. So you can start accepting Apple Pay, PayPal, Bitcoin, Venmo, cards, whatever happens to be next, including Android Pay, all with that single integration. It's the Braintree V.0 SDK. That one small snippet of code, and you're all set up in less than 10 minutes, and you want to check it out to find out more. They have a sandbox that you can kind of go into and work with the code and play in the sandbox at Braintree. To learn more, and for your first $50,000 in transactions fee-free, just go to BraintreePayments.com/Android. That's BraintreePayments.com/Android. We thank Braintree for their continued support of All About Android. It's a perfect fit. And there you go. Check it out, developers. All right. Wow. This is a really good one. We've got a lot of cool hardware to talk about. Let's do it. Hoo Hadouken. Boy, you can. It's okay, Josh. I could dance all day.
Really earned that one. Earned that transition. Good job, Jason. All right. So I am so excited right now because what everyone doesn't – to pull back the curtain a little at the All About Android headquarters, Jason puts together this wonderful document with all the stories we're going to talk about, and then he assigns who gets to talk about it. And sometimes every couple of weeks there's a story that I really want to talk about, and sometimes I get it assigned to me and sometimes I don't. And today I'm really excited because I got the story assigned to me that I wanted to. As we finally found out, it's September 1st, and we found out what Nextbit is up to, and we saw the unveiling of Nextbit's Kickstarter for their new phone called the Robin, which, to be honest with you guys, kind of blew me away. It's kind of cool. Yeah, maybe just because I'm excited for something new and different, but like I got really excited watching their Kickstarter video. Last week Miriam was on the show and she teased what Nextbit, she had a t-shirt on teasing what Nextbit was up to. And we found out today that it is indeed a new phone called the Robin, which is a smartphone that integrates cloud storage into the Android experience much deeper than any other smartphones. The device itself is a 5.2-inch 1080p with an IPS LCD display. It's running a Snapdragon 3 gig of RAM, 32 gig of storage, 100 gig of cloud storage free with purchase of the phone, 13-megapixel rear-facing camera, 5-megapixel front-facing camera. It's got a big old battery, got NFC, fingerprint sensor. It supports quick charge. And what's neat, the integration with the cloud, what it does is that it offloads apps and photos to the cloud after detecting that you don't need or use them, and then brings them back to you when you request to use them again. And that's just so clever. It's the idea of like, okay, I installed this app, but I never use it. So take it off my phone, store it up on the cloud, and when I and gray it out in the interface. And when I actually want to use it, quickly download it again, and boom, it's there ready to go for me. And you don't have to reinstall it. It just appears and works. Really clever. Also on the phone itself, the piece of hardware, it's very stylish, very design focused, looks unlike any other phone I've seen.
Yeah,
it's got it's got LED lights on the back on the device that confirm when it's connected to the cloud, as well as some really nifty physical buttons on there. It just looks really cool. And to be honest with you, I'm kind of hovering my mouse over the Kickstarter button, possibly going to pre-order one. I don't know yet, but I'm excited for it. So, so what, Jason, what do you think of after looking at this? I know the specs aren't crazy good, but offering it for $399 price point, you've got to expect some, you know, to have some things not be awesome, you know, not to be the greatest, you know, flagship killer phone. What did you think of this? What did you make of the specs?
I mean, it's very different, different looking. The jury's still out for me whether I like the design of it or not, but I appreciate that it's not just another black slab; that it looks very different. I mean, yeah, it's, you know, it's got a little four LED readout, that basically is your cloud indicator to know whether there's activity that's happening between the phone and the cloud and what it's doing. JJ in the chat room points out, and I didn't realize this, that you can pin apps that you absolutely don't want to be offloaded. And that's nice. Hopefully things aren't offloaded until you actually need to offload things. You know, if you've got a ton of space open, hopefully it's not just transferring to transfer. Unless it's totally seamless and you never realize it, then great, go for it, I suppose. I mean, there's a lot of interesting elements to this. I think one of the downsides here, and I did sign up for the Kickstarter, so I got in on the early...
Oh, you did? Oh,
yeah, nice. On the early ones. Wow. So,
pull the trigger, nice.
You know, the early birds got it for $300, essentially, and I think it starts at $350. So you got a
$50. Which I missed out. So I'm hovering over that $350 level. I'm hovering over that.
You know, even if you get in on the Kickstarter, you're not going to get it until like, I think January.
January, yeah.
And that, you know, I mean, things are moving pretty fast right now. I don't know. It's an interesting phone right now. I'm sure it'll still be interesting in January, but how interesting will it be after we've seen everything we're going to see over the next few months? Because we are entering a crazy hardware season.
Well, if there's any concern, Josh, if you roll back up on the Kickstarter page, you'll see that as of now, live tonight, before the show, they hadn't met their goal.
Oh, so
but
they
now
did.
They have met their goal.
Yeah.
They've met the $500,000. They're up over 503 in less than 24 hours. So it's happening. You know, and again, this is Kickstarter as a pre-order platform, you know, similar to what Pebble was doing and that sort of thing. And, you know, some people groan and roll their eyes at Kickstarter or whatever, but, you know, it works. It's a way to do it. And, I just like you said, it being bold, it looks unlike any other phone. You know, they've got two colors. There's a midnight version and a mint version, and the mint version is that light kind of teal greenish one that we've seen in the video. I like the midnight version. I think that looks really cool. And I just like the idea of innovation, of taking a different approach and taking a design based approach to, you know, in their video, they highlight the fact that smartphones have kind of fallen into a rut, and we're seeing the same kind of designs and the same kind of you know, approaches. And it's time to kind of step back and look and take a different approach. And I support that. I think it's great. And it's got USB-C. So there you go. It's going to have a pretty nice cable.
Does it have fingerprint reader?
It does.
Okay, it does.
It does.
Okay.
Yep.
They obviously marketed it well because it was day one of the Kickstarter and they blasted through their goal. And it does look really, really cool. I mean, this is the narrative, right? I mean, this is the, you know, the never settle, the like, what, you know, something completely different. It feels like a little bit like a political campaign, like when people are trying, you know, making new phones.
Yeah.
This looks really cool. I'm a little concerned that they're raising only half a million. Like now having a better understanding of the economics of how these things work and seeing, you know, some Kickstarters that were much less complicated than a full featured phone, you know, just never happened because there was just a complete underestimation of what it would take to ship. And what was that other phone? Was it the Firefox phone? There was a phone that a company tried to Kickstarter and just didn't hit their goal. Anyway, I'm a little concerned about that low number because you need a lot more money than that. But this is a neat phone. I am tempted by this. I love the LED display as someone who lives in a house that has no signal, like data signal, no T-Mobile signal in certain rooms. I really dig that. And that's a very simple thing, but.
They say in the risks and challenges area, when we hit our goal, we will have raised the funds necessary to place a minimum order with our manufacturing partner. And, you know, the names, the people and their associations prior to Nexbit involved here at least tells you that there's enough experience there that, hopefully, you know, I'm pretty sure that they've done their homework and they understand the reality of doing this. But I completely agree with what you were saying, Gina. And to be perfectly honest, I'm kind of like it worries me a little bit that it hasn't taken off faster, like it hasn't had faster traction. I realize it's only been a day, and I realize it's something to totally
less
celebrate.
Less than a day.
Right, it's been less than a day. But you've seen some of these Kickstarters that come out, and when they're super groundbreaking, I mean, it's like a wildfire, and it's just like I can't believe what's happening right now. And this is impressive. Don't get me wrong, and I'm very excited to receive mine and play with it and review it and all that kind of stuff. I just don't know how that's going to measure up in February of next year. Which, by the way, the January date is for early backers. I'm an early backer, right. So I would get it in January. Everyone else starts to get it in February, so then you're moving another month, and then you're getting closer to whatever else. So
that's kind of my concern. I mean, looking at it and looking at the specs, I mean, like really, the thing that stands out to me is that Snapdragon 808. Which, you know, might be fine right now, but when you're talking Q1 2016, is that really the processor that you want to go out with as your daily phone? You know, like, is it what's going to be out next year that will perform better? And, you know, you want the best kind of, you know, option for the phone, and whether or not they're in a position to do upgrades or another version or whatever. It's similar to the OnePlus, you know, it's the same kind of flow. But I love it. I love innovation. I love people taking risks. I love new and bold approaches. And this, like, I just got so giddy watching that video. And admittedly, maybe I'm prone to hyperbole, as we all know. So maybe, you know, tomorrow I will relax a bit and go, just another phone.
I don't know what you're talking about, Ron.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So this hardware section is full of of next bits, essentially. Gina, so you got the next one. This one has John Sculley involved.
Yeah. Former CEO of Apple, John Sculley. He's now the co-founder of OB World Phone, which just launched a new line of mid-range sub-$200 smartphones last week. So in Gadget Reports, these are handsets. They're targeting buyers 25 years and younger in emerging markets. So Asia, Africa, Middle East. We got two models. The SF1 is $199, 2 gigabytes of RAM, 16 gig storage, or $250, 3 gigabytes of RAM, 32 gigabyte storage. This is a 5-inch full 1080p display, 64-bit octa-core Snapdragon 615, 4G LTE, fiberglass body, 13-megapixel rear and front cameras have flashes with Dolby Surround audio, quick charge, 3,000 milliamp battery, and dual SIM. Pretty nice and also very stylish, kind of a similar boxy. They just got this kind of boxy design of the Robin, not the nice pastel colors of the Robin, but that like square kind of design, which is interesting.
Yeah, and some rounded corners as well.
And it looks like kind of a phone resting on top of a pack. The SJ1.5 is $129. That's a 3G quad-core processor, 16 gigabyte storage. These are both running Lollipop with OB LifeSpeed UI. These will be available in October to emerging markets. That's Asia, Africa, and Middle East. And Sculley told Engadget, "We are committed to being a design-led company and promises not to cheap out on quality in pursuit of low price points." I don't want to be too hard on Sculley. I don't know how many truly design-first companies say that explicitly.
Yeah,
the products really have to speak for themselves.
Yeah, for sure.
And I don't feel about these handsets the way I felt when I looked at the Robin, but they certainly are interesting looking and different looking. Mm-hmm. But what do you guys think? What do you guys think is two different phones we just looked at? Do these new OB World Phone handsets make you want them as much as the Robin or not so much? I guess we're not really the target market.
I'm not as jumping up and down as over the OB as I was over the Nexbit Robin, because this kind of feels like, hey, somebody's making an Android phone that they really wish was an iPhone.
Does this remind you of an iPhone, Ron?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I guess some of the edges kind of have that design aspect to them.
But which is fine, which is if that's the approach they want to take it. And it's unique in its own right. I mean, you know, but it is very iOS-y, kind of reminiscent, I guess I would say, you know. Mm-hmm. But more players in the marketplace is not a bad thing. Competition and innovation, you know, competition breeds innovation, and it's nice to see people, you know, taking a stab at it and taking an approach that isn't, you know, just another clone of the Samsung Galaxy, which I think is great. So So I don't know if I would jump at this one, but I'm real curious about it.
Yeah, and again, you know, we're not the target market, like you said, certain emerging markets, and it's a pretty, you know, it's even a lower cost phone than the next bit. These are all the phones that we're talking about in this segment are all kind of in the same general price category, maybe save for the one after the one I'm about to talk about. But then moving on to the next one, there's UK based Wiley Fox. This is another new brand of smartphones, announcing two phones last week. First one's called the Wiley Fox Swift. It's around $205 US, available in September, 5-inch 720p display, dual SIM. I think most of these, if not all of them, have dual SIM. 64-bit Snapdragon 410 processor, 13-megapixel rear-facing camera, 5 front, 2 gigs of RAM, 16 gigs of storage, micro SD card slot. Kind of, I guess you could peg this as like a Moto G kind of competitor, kind of in the same ballpark price-wise and spec-wise. And then there's the Wiley Fox Storm. This is the more expensive one, I'm guessing somewhere around like 250, 270 US, available in October. 5.5-inch 1080p display. Differences, Snapdragon 615 processor, 3 gigs of RAM, 20-megapixel rear-facing camera, 8 front-facing camera, and 32 gigs of storage and that micro SD card slot. They both have the metallic trim, and this is one of the manufacturers that has a partnership with CyanogenOS. So they're both running CyanogenOS as their default kind of OS underneath. It's available in September for Europe, Middle East, and African markets. Probably coming to the U.S. as well as other markets sometime, though there's no date for that, and that'll be available through their online store. So you're really not going to find any of these phones that we've talked about in this hardware section, by the way, by going into a carrier and you know, like striking up a deal with your carrier. You're probably going to be paying out of pocket for these by going to their website, you know, or Amazon or something like that would be my guess.
I like the statement. You're probably not going to find any of these phones we're talking about.
Oh, I didn't mean that. Where there's a will, there's a way. Somebody called me to task for my review of the OnePlus 2 in last week's Before You Buy, where I said, you know, one of the negatives is the invite system. I'm like, well, you can find them on Amazon. I'm like, well, you can. Some dude's selling them on Amazon and probably jacking up with the price, but you totally can. Where there's a will, there's a way. You can find someone to sell them to you. You're not going to get them from officially OnePlus 2 unless you do the invite process right now.
I'm curious by this Wiley Fox one. I like their logo. I like the look, although I feel like this is more of a, like you said, either Moto G or the higher end phone kind of reminds me of a Nexus 5. Mm-hmm. It just feels like, you know, them taking a stab at doing what we've already seen, you know.
Sure.
Definitely curious, though. It's definitely I like the look of it, and the Cyanogen kind of integration is neat to see that you know, Cyanogen, you know, thriving with
making
these new
deals.
Startups. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Moving on from the OnePlus debacle.
Yes.
And finding other partners. No, I think that's great for Cyanogen. And it's a definite plus, because there is definitely a group, a market for the Cyanogen OS that's, you know, that's become in certain circles a selling point of a device. Oh, it has that, then that's the one that I want. So
It's hard not to feel good about, you know, an affordable phone in emerging markets, right? I mean, and this is what Android's about right now, reaching the next billion, right? So you have Lollipop Soon M that can run on a low power device. They're going to get more people connected and more people access to information and apps. I mean, they're not us, because we're lucky and we have high speed internet and we can afford fancy phones, but not everybody can. So I feel great about this, even though I can't walk into my T-Mobile store and get one of these. Just getting more people online.
Yep. We have one more to talk about, right, Ron?
Yeah, as if this wasn't enough, but the Germans have to get in on the action. German manufacturer Gigaset announced a bunch of phones prior to the IFA event in coming up in Berlin. They announced the Mi line of phones with the Mi Pure, the regular Mi, and the Mi Pro. The Mi Pure is about $390 with a Snapdragon 615, 2 gig of RAM, 16 gig of storage, 5-inch 1080p display, and it is coming soon. The regular old Mi is around $530 with a Snapdragon 810, 3 gig of RAM, an aluminum body, 5-inch 1080p display, 32 gig storage, 3,000 milliamp battery, quick charge. And it's already available in the UK, Germany, France, Netherlands, Belgium, Spain, Italy, Poland, and Turkey. And then finally, for those who've got a little more money to spend, the Mi Pro costs around $620. It's also running a Snapdragon 810 with 3 gig of RAM. It's a 5.5-inch 1080p display, 30 gig of storage, slightly bigger battery, 4,000 milliamp battery, and this one is coming soon as well. So Gigaset getting into the phone game. So unknown if these are going to hit the U.S. or not, or if these will just be European-based. But it's another batch of high-end, mid, and low-end phones for the masses. So
yeah, and the high-end sounds pretty high-end.
It does. And, shiny. Yeah.
So good range there. And that's that. The Mi Pro definitely gets into that price category that I would say is kind of normal, you know, not the super discounted, has great specs. It's around $620, so that's not necessarily inexpensive by any stretch. So they've got the full range going. Yeah, it's an interesting time. Like,
fascinating.
From a design perspective, it's pretty impressive what we're seeing for a pretty low cost right now. And even if not all of these phones look groundbreaking necessarily, it just, at least there are good options in this price category. And that seems to be just a huge trend right now. Curious to know what that leads to as we get further. Does that lead to an even further race to the bottom? Do you think this is harmful to the ecosystem? What do you think, Gina?
I don't think so. I think it's a great thing. I don't know. The more the merrier. I mean, there's part of me that's like, okay, now show me really fancy, you know, phone. My OnePlus One is dying, you guys. The buttons no longer work. But
oh, no.
I need to hold on to it for another like 2 weeks because I feel like the next 2 weeks there's going to be so many new phones coming out. And I got to decide what to buy next. But no, I think it's great. I think it's great for the ecosystem. I think it pushes the operating system to be more performant and more secure. And it pushes app developers to be better and slicker and meaner and write easy, you know, apps that are easier to use with fewer taps and that use less fewer network connections or you know, less connectivity and a cache. I think it's a good thing. It's a good thing.
Definitely feel like out of these, you're right, Ron. The next bit Robin is kind of the most exciting of these, but then the next bit Robin is kind of seems to be targeted more at kind of the Western audience, you know what I mean, versus the rest. The rest are kind of for different markets. So
I feel like the next bit one is firmly focused at us and everyone watching the show and all this sort of stuff. They make a point to stress their experience and preference for the Android platform, and we've got ex Google people and stuff like that. So I feel like the next bit is really embracing everything that Android can be and is focused on this Western US based pro Android kind of marketplace who, after going through the Samsungs and the LGs and all the phones that we've had over the past couple of years and have gotten excited by the OnePlus, who are like, you know, honestly rabid for something new and different. I think it's striking while the iron's hot in that regard. So I think it's definitely going to be something I'm going to be keeping a close eye on and watching what they do.
We will certainly be keeping a close eye on the hardware announcements coming out of IFA in Berlin over the next few days. IFA begins on September 4th in a couple of days, so we've got a bunch to look forward to. Huawei's going to have an event to show off some cool stuff. I'm trying to see if I can get kind of a hookup on some review units from Huawei because, they're doing some really cool stuff lately. Sony has an event tomorrow morning, actually, and everyone pretty much knows at this point it's going to be the Xperia Z5. Kind of launch of that series. Tomorrow morning, Twit will be having live coverage of that event from 7, I think it starts at 7 a.m. Pacific. So you can check twit.tv/live or go to twit.tv, hit the live button. Mike Elgin will be here along with Russell Hawley of Android Central, Daniel Bader of Mobile Syrup, and then Sherilyn Lowe of, I believe, Tom's Hardware, if I'm not mistaken. So we'll have a nice group of folks doing some live coverage of Sony's event. And Twit just in general has plans to increase coverage of live events a lot more going forward. So you're going to be seeing more of these events as announcements happen and more things like this. So that's tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Pacific. Tune in and, you know, you can see what Sony's up to. And we'll talk about it, of course, next week on this show and everything else that's announced over the course of the next week, which is probably going to be a lot. Next week's going to be a hardware-heavy show. Speaking of hardware, but hardware of a different category, Josh, we'll jump to the other hardware drop right now. You didn't even need me to stretch that one out, did you, Josh?
Nope,
you,
I didn't.
You were like, I got this one.
Although I was tempted to just wait and see how you did.
Dang it. I'm happy you didn't. That would have been uncomfortable for everyone. Gina, are you still rocking Wear? Are you excited or are you kind of over it?
Heck yeah, no, I'm totally there. In fact, I'm ready for a new one. So lucky yeah. me, it's a good time. As a reward to Josh for getting that transition right, though, the first bit of interesting Android Wear news is that iOS devices can now sync to and from Android Wear devices. So there you go, Josh, you should get yourself an Android Wear device. Yeah. An app on the iOS device allows for syncing most of the traditional Wear functions, although Apple's limits against competing app stores means third-party watch apps aren't offered. For now, they've got official support for LG, the LG Watch Urbane, the Huawei Watch, and the Asus ZenWatch 2. So there you go. Android Wear with an iPhone.
Unofficially, it sounds like some people are able to get their some of the other watches to work, including the Moto 360 by factory resetting it and stuff. So, but Google did not announce the Moto 360 and a few of the others as an official officially compatible device, so be careful on that. Don't buy one explicitly because you think it's going to work and then realize that it doesn't, is I guess what I'm saying.
My Moto 360 has gotten really weird in the battery life. Like, I don't know if it was a particular update or if it's something the way that I have set, but the battery life hasn't been good lately, and I'm ready for a new one because I wear it every day, and I really do love it. And so the second piece of news, Motorola set a date for September 8th. This is the same day as next week's show.
Woo-hoo.
Good timing.
They did that on purpose.
Yeah, of course they did. They were like, we have to line up with all the Android.
Yep.
They're going to unveil the upcoming Moto 360 successor. The teaser confirms much of what we've seen in leaks and showcasing the gold model with the gold band.
But that's not it. That's like the header image. I don't know why they put that as the header image. That's the current one.
That's the current one.
Go below that. Those are the sport. There we go. There they are.
There you go. We've also seen some leaked renders of the Moto 360 Sport Edition with sporty bands made of polyurethane intended to be more of a fitness-style watch. The Sport isn't expected to see release until November.
Yes.
And then finally,
there's
LG with the LG Watch Urbane Luxe Edition, a limited edition $1,200 23-karat gold version.
Oh, yeah.
For the privileged people with lots of money. Look at that. That's a lot of gold right there.
Wow.
A lot of carats.
Yeah, no thank you. I don't know if I need that.
I'm kind of interested in the Sport.
In fact, I know I don't need that. Yeah, so you think the sport, if it does prove to exist in a couple of days, you think that's the one for you?
Yeah, I'm interested in the Sport. I'll go Sporty Spice with it. Yeah, sure.
Now, I did find this interesting. I saw a tweet. I forgot to put it in the rundown where Motorola tweeted out why the flat tire exists. And basically, they compared the surface area of the whole device compared to the amount of that that's taken up by the screen. And on the Motorola takes up less total area, like most of the area that is the device is made up of the screen versus everything else, which is basically a lot more of the device, you know, and the frame around it, if that makes sense. I'm probably doing a horrible job explaining it. They say that that's possible because of the flat tire. Or at least that's what they're using as their part of their rationale for saying why they stuck with the flat tire potentially with the Moto 360 sequels. So we're probably going to see the flat tire again. Motorola sticking to its guns.
So the chrome, like the chrome, that's a very apt thing, but like the outer rim is so thin.
Yeah, like Josh,
thanks to the flat tire. Like the flat tire is a feature, that's what they're saying.
Exactly. They're basically justifying the flat tire. I wish I had put the tweet in here and I didn't, and I'm sorry about that. But anyways, so, you know, you could buy that justification or not. I don't know.
I mean, they got to explain it. If they're coming up V2 with the flat tire.
I know, right?
I think that by now they would have figured out how to get rid of the flat tire. Yeah. I mean, obviously, they have figured out how to get rid of it, but they chose not to, which is interesting. It actually bothers me less than I thought that it would. But when I do notice it, I do notice it, but it's rare.
Jason, I don't know. I'm going to take a stab at this. Are you trying to say that the bezel is thinner on this because of the flat tire? Is that where it's like the actual watch face, the round part is...
I suppose that's what they were trying to say. They did a better job of illustrating it. Believe me, I'm scrambling to try and find it
right now.
Because
if you look at the LG, this looks like it's pretty wide. The frame around it is pretty thick.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you for clarifying this.
I just was curious.
The bezel was probably the word that I was looking for.
Yeah.
But I'm just full of brain farts today. Whew. Too many beans. So let's see here. That was hardware. Okay. Hey. Why don't we take a break? Why don't we put all this bezel stuff behind us? Josh, you can take a break, not think about trying to save me and explain things that I don't know how to explain myself. Let's take a moment and thank the second sponsor of today's episode. That would be Linda. Linda is awesome. Linda.com. This is where you can go to essentially get smarter, because Linda is filled with awesome videos, awesome courses to help you learn, to help you solve problems. If you're curious about something or you just want to learn something new, make things happen, whatever it happens to be, maybe you want to develop an Android app, you want to take better pictures, master your Excel skills, sharpen your abilities inside Photoshop, whatever it is, lynda.com has everything you need to do that. Some of the latest Linda courses that we recommend here and some of the cool ones that they've added recently, tips and tricks for Google Photos, there's up and running with Slack, adding Google Maps to Android apps. That's cool. I love when Google Maps are integrated into Android apps. 8 things everyone should know about Photoshop. If you're just learning that, the 8 key things to learn. If you're starting a new business or you're just looking to strengthen your business skills, there's a bunch of courses on media training, speech writing, creating a business plan, all sorts of stuff that's super helpful to you. I've found plenty of stuff in there. You know, based on my passions in audio production and soundproofing my my audio production studio at home, all the way to, you know, videos that I've used to help me learn the new edit suite here at the studio, you know, when we switched from Final Cut to Adobe. So it's all there. They lay everything out in a really easy to understand way, and they make it possible so that you can just dive right in and find the answer to something, or you can just watch start to finish and, you know, kind of follow along, learn as much as you can within that time, or just jump to the information that you need right at that moment. Lynda.com membership will give you just all of these videos, all done by top experts in their field. They're all passionate about teaching this content to you, and there's literally thousands of video courses that you can watch on demand, get smarter, learning your own schedule. You also have access to course transcripts. So every course that you take, the transcript's written out and it displays on the screen while you're watching. So if there's something you want to jump to, or you want to jump back, or, you know, you just want some clarification, reading's easier for you, you can jump down there and get right to it. And it's all searchable and all that kind of stuff. It also makes it very easy to take notes for things that you find important. There's tutorials you can download. You can access all this stuff on your Android or iOS device. And playlist capability of courses you want to watch, so you can customize what you want to learn and share all that stuff with friends, colleagues, and team members. So your lynda.com membership gives you unlimited access to training on hundreds of topics, all of these that I'm talking about and plenty more, all for one flat rate. Whether you're looking to become an expert, you're passionate about a hobby, or you just want to learn something new, definitely check out lynda.com/allaboutandroid. And if you do, you can sign up for a free 10-day trial. That's like an all-you-can-eat pass for 10 days of all of their videos. That's lynda.com/allaboutandroid. Definitely put that in there. You'll get the 10 days free, and you can check it out for yourself. And we thank Linda for their support of All About Android and the TWiT Network. All right. Hey, let's check out a few apps. Let's do it. All right. So let's see here. Google had a new app. And since we can't bring them into the arena, we'll show them here.
Yes. Google announced YouTube Gaming, which is basically their answer to Twitch. This is available on the web and also as an Android app in the Play Store. YouTube Gaming is just shows, it's live gaming streams with popular channels, and you can tag games that you're interested in and jump to them where quickly at any time. You have channels, you have my channels that you featured, that you favorited and featured channels, and it's live stream and chat. It sounds like very similar sort of feature match to Twitch. Not being very much of a gamer or a Twitch user, I actually haven't had a chance to really look through YouTube Gaming. I'm not sure how a gamer kind of chooses now between Twitch or YouTube Gaming. I mean, YouTube's a huge platform, so I imagine that going onto YouTube Gaming would be pretty tempting. Have you guys had a chance to take a look at YouTube Gaming? How do you think it compares to Twitch?
I haven't spent much of my life. Hold on. This could get interesting. Let me go ahead and mute
chat heads.
Mute this chat head. Jeez. That could get dangerous real quick.
Well, while you do that,
okay, here it is.
While you do that, I haven't had a chance to play with it yet. I'm going to play with it probably this week and this weekend. But it looks like they also this launch coincided with PAX this past weekend up in Seattle, which is the huge gaming convention. And talk about the right place to line that up. And I saw friends, good friends like Jeff Cannata and Anthony Carboni were up there and doing stuff with YouTube and YouTube Gaming and talking about it. And I can't imagine that if you're a gaming streamer, like someone who's been on Twitch, what I'm looking for now is how do you split and broadcast to both?
Yeah, right.
Because you don't want to lose either. You don't want to lose either audience.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. Twitch, as we all know, is owned by Amazon. Amazon acquired them and has been really kind of hands off and let Twitch kind of grow at its own pace. I know personally, I've seen a lot of not quite video gaming, but a lot of the folks in my little mini pinball community have embraced Twitch and have been broadcasting live pinball via Twitch. So I'll be curious to see if that also, falls over to YouTube or if it's strictly video gaming. But yeah, either way, it's neat.
Yeah. I'll go ahead and search for my favorite game.
Kind of surprising this didn't happen sooner.
Android, the game.
Oh, nice.
Did it make it? Oh, no, just episode. Wait a minute.
Oh.
Well, the trailer's in here at least, but there's no gameplay. There's no gameplay. No one's playing All About Android, the video game, right now.
No one's live playing All About Android right now on YouTube Gaming. Come on, people!
Look, it's a huge world we live in. I'm surprised not one person is playing it and streaming it live.
I would not have been surprised if that had shown. It would have been cool, but I would not have been surprised.
I guess I've never sat down at least. Yeah, I've never sat down to watch video games unless I'm sitting in a room with someone and watched them playing. Other world that I'm not connected with. But there's a really good point, Ron. It's a lot to expect because Twitch has become such a vibrant place for this stuff to begin with. And people, have careers doing this kind of stuff.
Yep.
Amazingly, this is what they do and they make money, really good money doing it. Expecting them to close shop and move on over to YouTube Gaming, that's probably not going to happen. So I guess they just end up creating their own kind of parted paths unless there's some way to get them to work together, which I doubt.
Some innovative app developer is going to make the split streamer, that sends it both to Twitch and to YouTube Gaming.
And then where there's a will, there's a way, as we've realized time and time again.
Yeah, but if YouTube and if Google and YouTube are, kind of I always make the Eye of Sauron, kind of Lord of the Rings reference. But if they've now cast their eye on esports and gaming and these live events and things like that, they have a lot of capital to throw behind them and a lot of weight, and they can monetize it and they can do. I mean, it's the potential for it is pretty staggering when you think about it. And when, Twitch, which, while backed by Amazon, has been kind of modestly, quietly, eking its way up there. Whether or not that Amazon, responds and turns up the support, will be interesting to see if that plays. Once again, competition breeds innovation and breeds excitement. So I think it's good. And hopefully the gamers are the ones who can benefit from it.
For sure. Man, Amazon keeps coming up in this episode. We've got another Amazon story because, Amazon, as you said, owns Twitch, right? That is right. I'm right there.
That is correct.
Okay.
Is correct.
So, how about we say goodbye to Amazon's free paid app of the day? You remember this? I remember when it first started, and I was all about it and would do it. And then I realized, at some point, I realized it was too much of a pain in my butt.
Well, so. Jason, the show's all about Android, not all about Amazon's free app of the day. That was just too long of a title. We had to reject. So,
yeah. All about Amazon's Android.
Yeah.
But they are replacing it with something that you might want to get into called Underground. It's a collection of, they say, $10,000 worth of apps, games, and in-app items that are actually free, meaning you get all of these paid apps, access to all these paid apps and their in-app purchases and all that kind of stuff without having to pay a cent. Amazon actually worked out deals with the developers to pay them on a per-minute basis based on your usage. So it's still free to you. Amazon's paying out of pocket. I hope the developers are getting a good deal in that regard. Amazon's paying them. Users pay nothing. You won't find the install in the Play Store, of course. You'll have to search Amazon's website for Underground, or if you have Amazon's App Store installed, again, you have to find that through their website. Then you can find Underground through there and install it. So, I don't know. This is an interesting model, actually. What do you guys think?
It's a little bit weird. I don't know that I completely, totally understand it. So, like, you go and there's, like, coins. And first of all, just to install Underground, like the App Store, you have to go download this APK. And then Android says, hey, you know, this is an APK. And then you have to go change your settings and say, yes, I'll allow it. Like, so there's, I mean, it's not like the Play Store. So it's, you really kind of have to, it's a little bit of a runaround for a regular person. And then I don't understand the name Underground. Like, I there's a coin system where I like use so many coins to buy a thing. It's confusing. And so they pay developers by the minute. What does that mean? So like if I put to do text in Amazon Underground for as many minutes as my users spend in their to do list, like Amazon pays me. I guess that's a good deal, but I'm not sure why Amazon's doing that. I don't know. Am I being dense, you guys? What am I missing here?
I don't think you're being super dense. I mean, I think in Amazon's defense, and Josh, I just put in the chat the link to the Amazon Underground page on Amazon so you can see it. It's not that hard to get the app. I mean, if you go to the feature page on Amazon's site, all you need to do is either on your device go to amazon.com/underground or enter in your phone number or email address, and they'll send you a link to download it. So they've made the jump to get it a little easier. You know, it's not that bad. But again, you know, why they won't play on the Google Play Store, I do not understand. That seems like a bizarre corporate, you know, kind of, no, we can't do that. You know, just doesn't seem to make sense. But I am with you on the coins and the way the developers get paid and all that sort of stuff. That seems a little weird, but if to the user it's free, then who cares, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Amazon just wants as many people using their app store as possible. And so I kind of feel like this is a way of them saying, we'll make the offer so sweet for users that they can't not install it because we're giving you all of this stuff for free. It's very similar to the free app, paid app of the day. We heard that and we went, wow, on the Play Store, I would pay for this $3, but instead I get it for free here. The inconvenience is me checking every day to see if I really want it or not. And here, I don't know if there is much of an inconvenience unless the coin system has an inconvenience factor to it. But, you know, they just want people to think of them when it comes to using apps.
Getting apps.
And using their app store. And so if they make the deal just so sweet you can't resist, then they've got you there. And as long as they're paying the developers something that developers actually are happy about, then I guess that's a pretty good deal. I guess I don't know the answer to that, you know.
And I guess
it's a better deal for developers, for sure. Like, so the Amazon approached me about listing, offering the To-Do Text, my app, as the free app of the day. And they were kind of like, you'll get all kinds of new users. Like, that was the offer for me. Like, as a developer, like, that's what I would get. Thousands of new users, but no one would pay, right? And I said, no, thank you. I'm good. So developers are getting paid. So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But you're not sure how much, and I'm not really sure. Like, as a user, so Amazon's paying by the minute, the amount of time I spend in Amazon apps. The developer, I don't know. It seems confusing. I feel like free app of the day was way more straightforward. But again, it was a real pain to go check it and to get the app store and, you know, installed because you had to, you know, change your settings or whatever. So I don't know. This feels like we're just going to, you know, repackage this in a new way because people got bored and forgot about the free app of the day.
Especially when you consider like really successful games, let's say, that have in-app purchases, and we know those are super lucrative. How much is Amazon paying a developer of a game like that to do this per minute that is worth that developer saying, yes, let's do it because I'm not making enough from in-app purchases, even though from what we know, those are actually really successful, depending on the game. And some big, big name games are in here. Well, so they have to be paying them something.
Yeah, they've got Star Wars games and Angry Birds and things like that. So clearly it's enough for – but are those big enough that they're like, yeah, it's just – it's more pennies in the bucket, you know? Like, sure, Amazon, we'll play nice here if you help us out over there, you know, somewhere else. You know, who knows? Whether or not this helps the small developer who's just trying to create something. I mean, it seems as if this is a way to drop the free app of the day program, get people looking to Amazon for apps again, and then introduce a new edgy – underground brand, you know, that they say they're committed to in their non-SEO image-based letter to the user. You know, they make a point to say that, you know, that this is a long-term program rather than a one-off promotion. We'll continue to invent and add more benefits to underground. So they're trying to build a, you know, why they would do this, like not HTML text is beyond me. But I mean, yeah, it looks like a typed letter. Cool.
It feels it's like a ransom note. The whole branding around the whole thing about how they're sort of creating this like special dark deal in the underground. I don't know. I get it. I get that it's marketing, right? But it's also kind of like.
But it's also kind of true. I mean, think about it. If the marketing works, basically what they're telling you is anything that you want in Google Play that's worth money, you can get here simply by installing this app and using it through us. And that's a pretty good deal, actually, for users. The more we talk about it, the more I think about it, the more I'm like, man, that like I really hope this is worth it to developers because the more we talk about it, the more interesting it sounds. Yeah. I wonder how successful it'll be. But
we'll see. Yep. Like all things with Amazon, we may never know until they fire until they lay off the whole team. Exactly. Yeah, so. You never know. Well, meanwhile, over across in Facebook land, a little change to the Facebook-owned application that's pretty popular, Instagram, rolled out across all platforms, Android included, that they have ended the requirement to have a square photo. Instagram now will support portrait, landscape, rectangular, square, whatever size photo you got, you can use it. This is to combat users inserting their own black bars into images to force aspect ratios that aren't perfectly symmetrical on all sides. So it's more of a keeping up with how users are using the application. Some people might argue that a trademark of Instagram was the square photo. They kind of muscled the idea of a perfectly square image into the world of photography, which I know a lot of photo people hated. I don't think this hurts Instagram. It could only help it just by making it easier to use all kinds of photos. I'm fine with the change. Jason, Gina, are you offended by the lack of the square now? Or
I was never a big Instagram user to begin with. I've used it a decent amount over the years, but I'm not like locked to it. And it's not something I think of. However, I will say that sometimes working within limitations is a nice characteristic about a service like this. It's certainly what has kept Twitter fun to return to is that they do keep it at 140 characters. Of course, they open that up on direct messages, but for some reason that actually makes a lot of sense to me and it's become really handy. But, you know, I feel like sometimes working within limitations is actually a good thing and it's certainly a differentiator. And I feel like that's a big differentiator for Instagram. At this point, though, they have so many users that are already locked into using it regularly. It probably isn't going to hurt them to open it up.
Exactly. I think that's where you're at is that they've got such a huge user base that now the people using it will use it more and lift that restriction. But meanwhile, like, you know, it rolled out and I still took square photos. Like I'm an amateur. Yeah. I'm not a pro photographer person. It's still fun. So it's fine.
But by default, it's still square. I really like it as a person who posts photos because now I don't have to like crop things that I don't want to crop.
Sure.
But I do have to say, like, it definitely makes the Instagram stream feel like uneven to me.
Or
like,
a little more generic.
As I'm scrolling, it feels things don't feel size. Yeah, there's more scrolling and things are different sizes and it is a little bit it feels uneven. And but, I mean, on one hand, I'm kind of happy to see Instagram look at user behavior, because there's so many interesting user behaviors that have like sprung up on Instagram to go around Instagram's limitations. Like you can't like URLs don't link there. You can't put links anywhere. So people say link in my bio because like it's the only place that you can link out to the web. So you see link in my bio everywhere. And I just it's funny, like it's interesting that they decided to get rid of the black bars and not, you know, something else like you know, the link in my bio stuff.
I think the question is that what user behavior do you pay attention to and what changes do you make and do adapt to? And the link stuff, I get that why they haven't done that yet, because really the people putting links in there are people who are trying to utilize the platform to push something, you know, to promote something. And they've got this whole advertising platform that they're trying to, you know, and which I'm seeing more and more ads in my stream, by the way, which is interesting.
Yeah, me too.
But you know, so I could see them, you know, if they enable links in posts, then as a marketer I would never pay for the advertising because I can just throw a link in a post and boom, it's done. The feature that I'm fascinated why they haven't added is multiple user accounts, which is something that we all groan about, and a lot of us who do marketing and things like that, because I've got my personal account, but I might have my company's Instagram account or something like that. And you've got to log out, log back in, and all that sort of stuff. Like that would be, I think you'd see a huge surge in use if people could have multiple accounts, you know, within the app. But I feel as if Instagram's vision or focus is photography. And so they're going to focus on the way users are using it within the confines of photography. And in that case, I can't fault them. I think that, you know, it's a good change.
Sure.
I want reshares. Also,
yeah,
posting
reshares
from the web.
Would be nice. While, retweets. Yeah.
While we're like yelling out Instagram feature requests, like there's so many features that Instagram could have done, and I get the link thing, but anyway, so it's kind of actually good to see them budge on something that was so staunch about for so long. It really did define their brand, and now that I have it, I'm sort of like, oh, I get it. I get it why it's been square all this time. Like I see what they did there.
Interesting.
But I'm enjoying it, and it is square is still the default, and I use it mostly anyway.
Yeah. Gina, we dropped the ball last week.
I am disappointed.
We blew it.
No, just kidding.
If you were here last week, we wouldn't have dropped the ball.
Exactly. See, this is we're lost without you, Gina. Help us.
We got an
email.
What
I didn't realize this.
We got an email from Dustin who said, "How can you not celebrate or even mention the birthday of Linux? Android is a Linux-based OS, and this episode was recorded on the 24th birthday of Linux. I am disgruntled."
Dustin.
I'm sorry, Dustin. You know,
sometimes
we just make bad decisions, and it happened last Tuesday.
We need to make better choices. We need to make better choices in the future.
We're going to try to do better. We're going to try to do better for you, Dustin.
I feel like this highlights how much we take Linux for granted.
Yeah, that's true.
Because so many things have been built on top of Linux that you almost just like it's just like coaxial cable. It's just there. It's a Linux will always be there, and we're doing things on top of it. And we should take a moment and acknowledge we wouldn't be here without Linux. So thank you, Linus, and the Linux team and everybody. So.
We wouldn't be who we are without you, Linux.
It's true. Thank you, disgruntled Dustin, for pointing out our complete lack of gratitude. I mean, for me, this like highlights the difference between a project and a product. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like when it's Chrome's birthday or Android's birthday, like we know all about it because Google's got a whole team, marketing team behind it, making beautiful graphics and videos and making us feel all the things about how great the internet is. And no one really is doing that for Linux, even though they should, because it's the quack.
What you're saying is that Linux needs a better marketing team.
Does Linux have a marketing team at all?
Yeah, I'm sure somebody in the Linux Foundation probably does, but I don't know if there's anybody.
Hardcore
really
Linux
behind.
Users are Linux marketing team.
Yeah, they're the right. They're the street team.
Yeah, they're the street.
So I blame them.
Here we go.
So here's
how Linux.com. Josh, there's the link in the chat. How Linux.com handled the birthday of Linux on August 25th. They posted to Linux.com, "Happy birthday, Linux! You've taught us much." In a wonderful, nice little blog post with no graphics at all. Like, isn't that so Linux? Like, look at that. Like, so there it is.
That's a little bit sad. I know. Lots of share buttons, though. Zero shares. It's so sad. Nobody pinned it.
They need an animated GIF of some sort, and you know, then people will at least Tumblr it.
24 isn't really a milestone birthday, so let's be honest.
24 isn't a big, that's true.
Next year, I expect to see a full rollout, a huge marketing plan where you're not going to be able to go anywhere without hearing about Linux in the month of August. That's what's going to happen.
The 25th year, yeah, it's going to be a big deal. Yeah. If we miss it next year, Dustin, you can go ahead and fire us, okay?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so hold on to this little clip right here.
Hey, because also we missed on August, on what date was it? On August 18th, August 15th was GNOME's 18th birthday, so we missed that. The GNOME project started 18 years ago. That's a huge thing, but no, we didn't celebrate that. We can't keep track of every birthday.
Yeah, I know. There's like literally a birthday every day. There is. There's a lot of birthdays, it turns out.
If you take a bunch of monkeys and put them in a room, sooner or later, it's going to be one of their birthdays. I'm sad.
Oh, boy. A bunch of monkeys title.
Show callback.
All right. Let's take a quick moment before we get to the arena and thank our final sponsor of today's episode. Man, this is a perfect time for Gazelle because, as you heard in our hardware section, there's hardware coming fast from all directions. We're going to hear about even more of it starting tomorrow at the Sony event and at IFA. I mean, now through the end of the year, it's like hardware season, essentially. It's raining from the skies. So Gazelle gives you the chance to, you know, give new life to your smartphone that you're not using anymore. Your used smartphone. You can actually sell that to Gazelle. They'll give you a fair price. You get an online offer that's free. You can go there right now and find your make and model and see what they'll give you for it based on its condition. You just answer a few questions and they'll give you an instant price quote right there. And then you know, they'll send you a box. They usually send you a free box. You just drop it in there when you're ready. You've got 30 days during which Gazelle will honor that price that they've given you. You send it back to them, they'll pay you cash. They'll even pay cash for broken phones, by the way. Shipping is free. Most items, like I said, Gazelle will provide the box for. All of your personal information is removed from the device if you don't do it yourself. A lot of people do that themselves, but if you don't, if you forget, Gazelle's trustworthy, they can do that for you. And they'll pay you fast. You can lock in that price, and like I said, you'll have 30 days to send it in. That gives you plenty of time to get a new one, and you know that we're going to hear all about amazing, you know, new devices over the course of the next month. So you want to lock in that price before that price starts to drop because everybody else is locking in their price. You get the check in the mail. You can also get an Amazon gift card in your inbox or a direct deposit to your PayPal account. And Gazelle has paid out to date over $200 million to over 1 million customers. And you should definitely check it out for yourself. Trade in your phone. They'll buy your phone from you. You can also buy from them some of, you know, their better conditioned phones that they've taken in. You get a nice chunk off of that as well. Trade in your used phone and your electronics for cash. That's what it's all about. That's what Gazelle does and what they do best. Visit gazelle.com today and check them out. It's a perfect time to do that. That's gazelle.com. We thank them for their continued support of All About Android and the Twit Network. Okay, it's that time. It's time to jump into the arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
Let's see. Last week, I can't remember.
It's a win for Team Guest.
Oh, is it?
For Gina's Team Guest gets the win, yeah.
Ooh. Team G&G.
Let's see here. Minimal live wallpaper. That's right. Yep. Whose app was that?
That was that Liam's?
Let's see here. No, that was...
Oh, no, who was no, on last the week?
Yeah, that was Kevin's. Kevin Purdy's.
Kevin
had Minima live wallpaper. Yeah, it was great to have Kevin back on. Ink Space, Ron, was yours. That came in second at 32%. Mine was Verb at 15%. I thought that'd get a little bit more, but that's okay. Miriam's was Equalizer Music Player Booster. Not a very good name, but a cool app. I don't know. I'm just thinking you could do better with the name if you're literally listing features in the title.
SEO goes a long way, unlike our naming convention. So.
I suppose.
But thanks to Wade County in the chat room, the standings to date are Jason, you're coming up in last with 10 wins. Gina and the team guests have 11 wins, and I've got 13 wins. As we enter in the last stretch of the year, September, October, November, December, last 4 months to make it happen, I'm in the lead. So,
Man, this is this is gonna be a crazy last chunk of the year.
We've never seen an arena this close.
Over the place, but totally equal of the whole stretch. So I'm the big loser.
Thanks, Gina.
You're fighting for the guest spot, Gina, and that's important because guest has never won throughout the course of a year.
Team guest
is really doing pretty strong this year, so it's a fighting chance. I'm going to go first, though, because I'm the big loser that is returning here today. Do you remember Hitman Go not too long ago? It's a game. It's kind of had probably one of my favorite games in recent months for Android, but it has a total kind of board game quality to it, kind of strategy. You move a space and you got to make sure you don't move into the wrong space at the wrong time, otherwise something will attack you. You probably see some similarity between that Hitman Go and this game, and it actually makes sense that you'll see similarity because this is called Lara Croft Go. So it's by the same team, the Square Enix team, and it's using the Tomb Raider franchise and kind of putting it in a similar gameplay style, essentially, but I don't know. It's a lot of fun. Nice amount of strategy and all that kind of stuff. So I'll go ahead and show it. All right. So one thing I like right off the top is it has cloud save capability, and you can actually retrieve your progress from one device and load it up on another. I don't know why more developers don't do that, but you do get that here. All right, and I have the audio up, so you should be getting that as well. You can see some of the levels that I've done here. So this is kind of the second world, the Maze of Snakes. And you see a lot of kind of the things that you're similar, that will remind you of playing the old Tomb Raider games. It's very kind of close to the first series. You know, everything kind of has a nice polygon kind of form to it. It's not overly realistic, but there's nice animations, all that kind of stuff. So you can see the little path that I have as Lara Croft. And you have to follow those. You see those little spikes. They're moving every time I take a step, then they kind of take a step. There are different different elements inside each world that you can interact with. I'll go ahead and go up here and tap that, and that's going to kind of move the spike up so that I now am clear to go down here and cross.
This is cool. This looks awesome.
Man, I love this game. I'm having such a flashback. Wow.
Yeah, and it's cool. There are different obstacles like snakes. If you approach them and you approach them while they're facing you, see, I'm about to get slammed by that one. I'll go like this. They will attack you. So then I got to go up here and then down and over. Uh-oh, am I going to die? I'm totally going
to
die.
It's really true to the original games. I like the boxiness.
So it's suddenly, because I'm playing and talking, I'm realizing it's not as easy to play
and explain
this game.
At the same time, Jason? Come on.
Here.
Up one more.
I'm going to go to a different one.
Oh, no. Oh, you were there.
Then I was just undoing what I had already done. Here, let's do this one because I just did this one before the show. So I know. I'm sure it'll all come back to me. And maybe you'll actually see some snakes here.
We should be doing this on YouTube Gaming, by the way.
Yeah. Okay, so So it's all these little puzzles, right? And hidden throughout in the background, I've probably already captured it on this level, will be these little kind of like treasures that you can pick up as well. And, you know, they end up piecing together like relics and all this kind of stuff because, you know, you're Lara Croft. You're collecting treasure and stuff. So it's kind of a cool bonus feature, I suppose. God, why am I sucking so bad at this game? Let's see here. Maybe. No. Okay. Oh, I think I know. I'll go like this, then that, then down. Is that. Am I just going back to where I came from?
Can you die? I want to see you die.
Oh.
I didn't mean that personally, Jason.
I died. I'm doing a really bad job of showing off how you win this game. I'm only showing you how you lose it. But I implore anyone to come on this show and try and talk their way through a hard puzzle game.
It is.
It's not easy. Anyways, all the levels are different, but they kind of follow a similar kind of flow as I'm kind of showing. Let's see. Okay, cool. I can show you a snake. All right, so I'll go here, across. See how the snakes are facing a different way? I can attack it I can only attack it if I jump onto the space and I don't jump into them while they're facing me, essentially. I can't remember. Yep. See, so that's going to get me because it's facing me, right? So you kind of have to plot your moves, pull the levers, move things around so that you can get around them without them actually, you know, attacking you. And I don't know. It's got great sound design, challenging gameplay. See, now I'm on a roll. There we go.
Oh, look at the guns. That's cool.
Then I want to go around here and get this guy from behind. And then I'll do that lever. And then I'll go that way. Oh, wait. No, this way. Yeah. Anyways, you get the picture. I'm just proving that I suck at this game, really.
I could watch you play games, Jason, for hours.
Really? Should I be on YouTube gaming right now?
I think you should. I think you're missing your
Because part of it is like how you talk about what you're playing, right?
Yeah.
So you just have to say stupid stuff the whole time.
I'm the art of it.
All right. I think I might actually be able to win if I do this, and then I'll pass the baton to the next person because I don't think anyone really wants to watch me play this game in its entirety.
I do.
But I'll go over here. I'll do this, and I'll move this. That allows me to get there and go boom, and then... Yes, I think I can do it.
Oh, yeah.
Look at her showing off. Good job.
See, that's coming behind me. It has a lot of elements like that. It's just a lot of fun. If you liked the Hitman Go series, this is very similar, but it has enough things to kind of keep it fresh. And I don't know. I like the callback to old school Tomb Raider. So there you go. Lara Croft Go. It's $4.99. It does have an in-app purchase that you can buy if you get stuck with a puzzle. $4.99 to basically give you hints on all of the play fields, but I don't feel like you need that. Just play it. You'll figure it out. There you go. All right. So who is next? Gina, we'll go ahead and show off your app.
Yes. Well, speaking of Amazon Underground, which is what we talked about earlier, which has replaced Amazon App Store, there's a reason to download it and grab it because Amazon just issued an update to their instant video app. It's now just called Amazon Video. And it's been out for a while, and I was actually surprised it's never been mentioned on the show. I picked it tonight for the arena because they just released, I think just today, offline viewing for Prime, Amazon Prime Instant. So if you're like me, you've had this Prime subscription and never really looked at instant video. Amazon's been pushing instant video forever. Now there's like actually a really decent way to watch it on your Android device, not just through the browser. Amazon Video app now allows for offline viewing. So... And it works really well. Most Prime Instant videos, they're free and they're available to download offline. I tried it today. I downloaded an episode of 6 Feet Under and watched it on the subway on the way home. It's fantastic. If you fly or if you just, you know, if you have a bad network connection, you download stuff, watch it on your device. And it comes with, when you watch it on the device, it comes with an IMDb powered that X-ray feature. So when you're watching offline, you'd be completely disconnected, not online. And you can tap the X-ray feature and you can see all the actors and other things that they've been in and what songs are playing, what the names of the songs are. Really, 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 really nice. This offline viewing for Prime members used to be available only on Kindle branded devices, but this is now available on all Android and iOS devices. But not on the desktop. Not every single Prime Instant Video can be downloaded, but there are quite a few options. I actually had a hard time finding ones that you couldn't. There hasn't been like a full list that was published, but if you've got a Prime subscription, definitely grab this app and check it out. And of course, you do have to download it through Underground and get the APK and, you know, all that jazz. You can also, if you're not a Prime subscriber, you can pay for individual episodes and then download them for offline viewing, a la iTunes or Google Play Video. But I highly recommend Transparent. I really enjoyed it. I've been watching Shaun the Sheep with my kid. I watch The Wire at the gym. Still no cast functionality, and I don't know if that's ever going to happen, so that's kind of a bummer. Really good for watching stuff kind of on the go. I really like rewatching stuff through Amazon Instant because it's, you know, and now especially that you can get it offline, it's really nice for travel.
Yeah, now so that you can actually access all this stuff. And man, offline, that's awesome for travel.
Offline
if you're
going to
go on a flight or something like that. That gives me more of a reason to actually use Amazon Video with my Prime account because I just always forget that it's there because, you know, it's not as fully featured as the other options that I have. But man, now I want Netflix to have offline. That would be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, Netflix has basically said, like, never going to happen. Yeah. You know, of course, Google Play offers offline. But you know, the Amazon Instant, I have it, you know, I have access to it, and it's actually quite a good selection. There's a bunch of HBO shows and it's a little extra something you might have and may not be taking advantage of. Now you have actually a good app to do so. So that's Amazon Video. That's all it's called. And you got to go to the Amazon Underground. You got to go to the Underground to go get it.
Apparently, there's an Amazon original series called Androids.
Androids. There was some cheesy startup show. I forget what the name of it now.
Betas. It was Betas.
Betas. Oh, yeah. I actually really enjoy Betas.
It did not get renewed for a second season, shockingly.
Yeah,
it was shocking. Terrible.
It was awful.
But it was like great. Like I'm on the treadmill and I just need something light, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, it was very engaging for people like us.
Yes.
And it was funny because it came out the same time as Silicon Valley season one. And there was a lot of mirroring, but Silicon Valley was just like was more funny, whereas Betas was more dramatic or whatever. And it just, so.
It was fun to scoff at how stupid it was.
Yeah. And Amazon just cranking out those series. I can't even keep track. And actually, this is a nice segue because Gina, I didn't realize, you know, we something in the water as we both have been. We're talking about apps that let you watch TV. But this past week, I was in New York. I stayed with my sister. Now, I am a cord cutter. I do not have cable in my house. I do all my viewing elsewhere. And the only time I ever really get to see actual TV is when I'm at staying with my sister, where they have full cable, they have Verizon Fios and stuff like that. And not only did I see Amazon actually advertising like TV ads for their original series, which I thought was fascinating. Like there's some new show with Ron Perlman that were like they were running commercials on cable.
Yeah, Netflix. Yeah.
So, yeah, fascinating. But when I do watch cable TV, the only channel I really watch, sadly, is HGTV because I'm addicted to House Hunters and to Flip or Flop and things like that. And I had no idea. I was shocked when I was watching HGTV on the regular TV. They had ads promoting their HGTV Watch application with Chromecast support. Like that was actually something that they highlighted in the TV ad, like now with Chromecast, which I was like, oh, awesome. Let me check this out. And sure enough, it's a pretty decent app. Unfortunately, it does link to your cable account. So it does that thing similar with ESPN's Watch app and things like that, where you need to log into your cable account in order to unlock some content. Unfortunately, I don't pay for TV content with Comcast, so I did not get access to that content. But they don't limit the content in the app to just those locked stuff. There's tons of episodes of House Hunters that I can watch with no problem. And now I can easily Chromecast it and watch it in the comfort of my own home, which is awesome. And if I decide to subscribe to cable ever again, which isn't going to happen, I'd be able to unlock not only more recent episodes, but they also have a live function, which allows you to stream the channel live, which I thought was really interesting, very similar to what Sling is doing. So good on HGTV for being progressive and actually putting out an app that is useful and functional, and good on them for like aggressively promoting Chromecast support, which is awesome. So HGTV Watch, it is my new way to watch to my guilty pleasure of Property Brothers and Flip or Flop and all those shows. So.
Is it a new season of Flip or Flop yet?
Then we just wrapped up the latest season. Season 3 just wrapped up.
I didn't realize that. I'm going to have to check it out.
I discovered on HGTV they now have Flip or Flop follow-up where they go to see the houses that they sold to people to see the people living in the house, which I thought was very funny. So fascinating. So,
Flip or Flop follow-up.
A lot of Fs in that.
Not very, anyways.
Yay, Chromecast. Amazon, take note.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, for real.
HGTV Watch is the name of that app, and that is free. So you can vote for your favorite app this week by going to AAAPoll.com/229. Is it Lara Croft Go, HGTV Watch, or Amazon Video? All entertainment. So you're very entertained this week. You're welcome about that. Definitely place your vote. We'll check in on it next week. AAAPoll.com/229. But man, that's it. It's always so much fun when Gina's here. Gina, you're awesome. Thank you so much for coming back.
Thank you for having me. And since now that the arena is so close, you know, I might just be free every Tuesday of late November, December.
Oh, wow.
to come in on the arena and defend my...
Gina bringing it. I like
just
it.
Just saying.
We're going to remember this.
Yeah.
Well, I won last year, right? So I'm the reigning champion. Did. So this is my year to lose. So I don't know.
I was going to say, we can't allow this back-to-back business, Jason.
We've never had a back-to-back yearly winner. We've never done that.
It would be a first. So, Gina, what do you want people to know? What's at the top of your list right now?
I want everybody to check out MakerBase. It's makerbase.se, free site, just launched a few weeks ago. Add all your favorite Android apps and projects that you've built, DIY projects or weekend projects or stuff you've done at work, anything you're proud of. It's just kind of like IMDb for apps and tech stuff. And of course, ThinkUp, and MakerBase is made by my company, ThinkUp. ThinkUp gives you fun insights into your social networks. And yeah, I think that's about it.
Fantastic. Love what you guys are doing over there. That's awesome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's a lot of fun. I love being on the show with you guys.
Are you kidding? You're welcome all the time. Anytime you want to come. You have a spot parked right next to me here on inside a television.
Co-host Emeritus.
That's right.
I'm going to be keeping an eye on those arena numbers. Team G&G, baby.
We always have a spreadsheet with your initials next to stories in it. So always a pleasure. Thank you, Gina. Ron, what about you?
Yeah, so go to about.me/RonXO where you can follow me on Google Plus and Twitter and Instagram and all that fun stuff. September is shaping up to be an exciting month. Not quite yet, but I'm gonna have a bunch of personal announcements and things like that that I'm excited to share with everybody. So stay tuned, and the best way to find out is to follow me on Twitter. So do that.
Fantastic. What about you, Mac and Josh?
Oh yeah, hey.
I'm talking to you.
Okay, I got it. Yeah, you can always follow me on Twitter, you know, the Mac and Josh. And you'll find out like whenever I threaten to give up all my Apple stuff and go to Android, which I do like once a week.
Yeah, it's pretty regular.
All the time.
One of these days it's gonna actually happen.
One of these days, yeah, probably. So
I mean I'm indoctrinating you because we pulled you into All About Android production here tonight. You are the editor every week for Android App Arena. So
yeah, so I get to
I'm slowly chipping away.
I know. I get to see all these cool apps and all these cool things you can do with Android.
Yeah. Fantastic. I'm actually foregoing my plug this week because I want to talk about something very, very quick. I'm not going to keep you guys for very long. That suddenly has become very important to me. I just want to say, and you've probably heard it a million times, and it's probably kind of, I don't know, it's one of those things that you probably hear all the time and you disregard because you hear it all the time. But I just kind of want to say, if you have the ability, get yourself some CPR lessons, because you being able to do something important at any moment when there's an issue that someone needs help, any of that kind of stuff, if you are trained to do to step in a situation like that, you can literally save a life. And it means a lot to me. I don't want to really go into it right now, but if I can use this show to convince even a couple of people to do this, then that actually means in the long term of life that a couple of lives can potentially be saved. And that's worth it to me. As for this show, thank you so much for joining me. I'm sorry to end it like that, but I had to get that in there. It's really important to me, and I hope you guys understand. You can hit the music now, though, sir, because we've hit the end. Leave us a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA. You can send us an email to AAA@twit.tv, or you can attach a link to a video and it becomes a video mail. We are on Twitter at Android Show. We're on Reddit. We've got a subreddit, twitaaa.reddit.com. You can find show notes, past episodes at twit.tv/AAA. That's our home on the web, as well as episodes on YouTube and iTunes. And finally, you can catch us live every Tuesday, 5 p.m. Pacific at live.twit.tv. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, guys.